my relationship to the subcontinent and to India in particular, it was there that I first recognized that art and architecture are such entangled, extraordinary ways in which we understand each other and understand the ways in which we see.
Welcome to the Design Padaki podcast, a show that deconstructs the Indian and international design world with leading industry experts. I'm Isha Gupta, the founder of Design Padaki. Through our podcast, we aim to promote thoughtful and incisive conversations on design, art, and architecture. Sean Anderson is an associate curator in the Department of Architecture and Design at the Museum of Modern Art. A fellow of the American Academy in Rome, he has practiced as an architect and taught in Afghanistan, Australia, India, Italy, Morocco, Sri Lanka, and the UAE. He has written books on South Asian ritual sculpture, as well as on modern architecture. As of February 2021, his latest exhibition at the MoMA, titled Reconstructions, Architecture and Blackness in America, will be the first exhibition to highlight the work of African-American and African diasporic architects co-organized with Mabel O. Wilson. Geeta Mirchandani. Geeta is the founder of her namesake public relations firm, Geeta PR. Known for her understanding of the evolving media landscape and digital platform, she has masterfully executed international programs in the field of luxury, design, fashion, travel, and philanthropy. Hi, Geeta. Hi, Sean. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm really excited to have you here.
Hi.
Hello.
We're going to be talking about architecture through the lens of art, and I think it's a really interesting subject for us to explore, and who better than the two of you all to discuss this with. So I'm going to get started with my first question, which is, what do art and architecture mean to you all? So, Sean, you can take this one to start with.
Certainly. Thank you, Isha. This is a big question. And I have to say that these relationships have been perhaps changing over time, over many years, and they will inevitably continue changing and evolving as time goes on. Specific to your audience and specific to the ideas of this great podcast, I wanted to kind of step back for a moment and just talk about my relationship to the subcontinent and to the region and to India in particular, because I believe it was there that I first recognized that art and architecture are such entangled, extraordinary ways in which we not only understand each other and understand our histories, but also the ways in which we see. And so I spent quite a bit of time in India. My first teaching job as an architect was in Ahmedabad. I used to take students to the Calico Museum, all over the city, in the pole houses, etc. And what you realize in a place like Ahmedabad, if not all of India, is that architecture is fundamentally an art form, in as much as art can be architectural. And so I think of, for instance, there is no word for design in Sanskrit or Hindi, right? But there is for art, right? Kala, or for architecture, vastukala, right? So these are very broad ways in which we can understand principles of living, principles of where we are in the world at any one time. And so I think over the years of not only living and working in India, also in Sri Lanka for quite some time, but also traveling across the entire region, whether it was for research or for work and so forth, what I started to really imagine was that architecture is not about buildings. That is one aspect, one component of what architecture is. But if we look more expansively at what architecture can be, It encompasses all of human behavior. It can encompass and affect human behavior and our experiences of the world. So I like to think in a way that what my mentor, I think for South Asia, always taught me, his name is Pratapadija Pal. He is perhaps one of the most recognized curators and art historians of South Asian art in the world, still is, to my thinking. And what I learned with him, I worked with him very closely for a number of years, is that space, the spatial capacity of art, for instance, if we look at a mandala, if we look at vastu, these are spaces. These are designed and understood as spaces. And they become metaphors for larger ideas about not only the universe, but also about the world in which we live. So I would like to think about today, while we're talking, about all the different ways in which these spaces come together. They are seen, they are experienced, they are understood differently by individuals and by communities. All of this very long-winded response is to say that architecture and art for me are fundamental to who I am, and I think they are fundamental to who we are as society.
Right. I was watching a video of Oliver Eliasson where he talks about the building that he did in Denmark, which you must mm-hmm. be aware about, the Finnhus building. And he talks about how when art and architecture come together, they co-create a very strong third vertical in a certain sense. So do you agree with that? Do you think that's what you're trying to explain as well, in a certain sense?
Yeah, I think that like art, there's potential in architecture, right? It's something that we're coming around to, or we have come around to, and then it slips away, and then it comes around to it again. It's a way of how we perceive the built environment. The built environment is all around us. Humans built it, and architects intersect with that built environment in very particular ways. When we overlay the potential of architecture with that of art or artistic thinking or even art in and of itself.
Right.
That relationship is one of great promise. It's of great broadening of how we see our built environment, not just as an expression or model of financial mm-hmm. capacity, right? But rather it's about ourselves. It's an extension of ourselves. And that's what's so remarkable about architecture that has the possibility of changing how we see ourselves and the environment. My experiences in India have always taught me that is to see past perhaps the building, the structure, mm-hmm. to think about that space that building or structure signifies. And when we intersect with that space, we become more than ourselves.
The other topic that we want to talk about was also there's so many modern day iconic buildings. They're sculptural. So you have the Louvre or you have the Walt Disney building. Mm-hmm. Or for example, then you also on the other hand have the Hudson Yards, which is not technically... It's an installation of sorts, if you look at it, and it's called an interactive sculpture. So how would you differentiate the two, and what is your opinion on both of them? Because they're both, the concept is so different, but yet so powerful at the same time.
Well, don't get me started about Hudson Yards. it's really, Hudson Yards to me is a shame in a way, because... There was such great potential there to really think again about what makes New York City and Manhattan in particular so extraordinary as an urban space. So I won't go any farther than that. But you know, Eliasson's work there, which clearly is riffing off the stepwells, Indian stepwells. You know, I would much rather go to an Indian stepwell than the vessel. I could learn a whole lot more from an Indian stepwell. But, you know, what's adjacent to that is The Shed by Diller, Skidfidio, and Renfro. And I worked for them for quite some time early on, many years ago, when they were a small office. And what you realize with that, that building, that kind of set of buildings, really, is, again, this potential that architecture can not only transform how we experience the world, but also transform how we see each other. And I think The Shed is really exemplary for activating and signifying a new way of thinking about the art, if you will, of building and vice versa, right?
Right.
You know, when we look at India, though, or even South Asia in terms of iconic buildings, I've spent a lot of time in Chandigarh, for instance, and also in Ahmedabad. You know, those were expressions of forms of independence, certainly through Nehru. They were forms of architecture that began to signify a break from colonial past, in as much as trying to express something new, right? Something radically different about the nature of what a post-independent India or South Asia might look like. So, you know, these key moments, especially IIM in Ahmedabad, Chandigarh, and in Dhaka, Khan's parliament building and so forth. That moment in architecture was this expression of seeing anew, seeing the world anew, seeing the country and the nation anew. I don't think contemporary architecture, when we just look at a tall building, does that. I think tall buildings generally become bank accounts in the sky.
Right.
But there is a possibility to challenge that. There is a possibility to rethink the ways in which cities grow and cities change and how we understand and occupy space in these places. Again, there's the project of Port City in Sri Lanka, outside of Colombo, built on completely non-existent land 10 years ago. So instead of actually thinking about transforming Colombo and mm-hmm. making Colombo better, they just create new land and put, they eventually will put some buildings out there. Is that necessary? I mean, there's so much happening in the world right now that is expressive of this dance between politics and economics and geopolitics and so forth. And I keep returning to, you know, singular expressions of architecture and art, that fusion tells us of the promise of what architecture and the built environment can be.
And let's talk about Corbusier. He started as an artist. And his journey to Chandigarh has been extraordinary. So do you want to talk about how he's taken those roots and sort of just expanded on it?
I went to architecture school and was very much kind of embedded in Corbusian ideas. Those were my teachers who had either worked for Corbu or, you know, also were taught by his protégés. And for a long time, I resisted kind of Corbusier, whether I wanted to or not. And, you know, having taught quite a bit, both architecture history and design, you know, Corbu obviously comes up. But I think we are at a juncture now where we have to rethink these paradigms. We have to rethink why is Corbusier's Chandigarh privileged over a Worli village? Why? Is it because it was concrete? Because it is a new form of city making? All very important, obviously. But, you know, I'm also fascinated by, in the building of Chandigarh, you had the likes of Jane Drew, thinking about housing, and now the housing complexes in Chandigarh, which work fairly well, are also kind of becoming sites for innovation, right? So you have people who are building on top of the original structures and so occupying a new kind of space. I like to think of those buildings in Chandigarh, but you can think of Corbusian architecture as a platform. He set out a way of thinking about the world. And mind you, it didn't work a lot of the time. It still doesn't. But yet there was this idea of transforming how we, you know, occupy space and how we interact as humans. If you were to look at, say, what Doxiadis tried to do in Islamabad, and I was in Pakistan last year, what you see also is this, again, this idea of, you know, here is nature, here is human nature, here are the ways in which communities function and build upon each other. And I'm going to use architecture as a means to intervene in that, these systems, right? I think we shouldn't necessarily privilege Corbu. But I think we're at a juncture now where we really have, as architects, as historians, as curators, as designers, really start to shift the ways in which we imagine our canon, so-called canon, and are operating within that canon.
How is your curatorial role at the MoMA informed by your thoughts on art and architecture?
I've been at the museum now 5 years. More than five years. And it's a kind of extraordinary homecoming for me because I was outside of the U.S. for quite some time, more than 10 years, and working in Morocco, in Italy, in Afghanistan, in Dubai, Australia, most recently. And I think in all of those places, I have taken ideas of, again, the role of art, the role of architecture in transforming who we are, and to now bring it to MoMA, a museum that I kind of grew up in, has been one of great revelation in a way that here is a chance to place artwork, a work of sculpture, for instance, next to or in proximity of a work of architecture. What those narratives start to share is what for me is of great interest. Because for too long, these disciplines have been separate. They have been seen separately. They have been understood separately. And I am most interested in the ways in which, to your very first question, the ways in which art can inspire or influence architecture in as much as architecture can influence and inspire art. And they don't necessarily need to be blurry, but they do reinforce each other in very provocative ways. And so the museum has become, for me, a great, I don't want to say experiment, a way in which we can confront also not only institutional histories, but our own social and environmental reckoning that is happening right now. So, you know, I'm in the midst of installing an exhibition. It will be the first time that in 92 years, in the museum that had the first collection of architecture and design in the world, this will be the first time that African-American and African diasporic architects, designers, and artists will be seen. To me, that is this extraordinary moment.
Wow.
It's taken 3 years to get here through it all of the events of last year. But I would like to argue, too, that we have a chance now to think of architecture and art as reparative, that it begins to tell us something about our own blind spots and our own absences and our own choices that are made. And by doing so, and by acknowledging those, we can then build again, like I said earlier, but we can build anew. And that's my hope, not only for our exhibition, but also going forward.
Wow, that's incredible. That in 92 years, the first exhibition, that's completely commendable. Well done. I mean, I wish we could come and see it. I don't see that happening for a while, but...
Well, we will be, if I can, I will plug a course that we, an online, free online course that we will launch at the same time as the exhibition, which begins to dissect these ways of how we understand the built environment. And it is not specific only to the African-American experience, but rather all places in the world that not only were affected by colonialism, but also a kind of a reordering of, or say, who do we privilege when we make architecture and our cities and why? So that will be launched at the same time as the exhibition. And you'll get to visit the exhibition in a video project that we will do as well. So.
Lovely. I look forward to this. My next question is for both of y'all, for Geeta and you. So does storytelling or PR play a role in shaping the narrative around certain projects? How does that affect the conversation? Geeta, you want to start with this one?
Sure. I think from a PR standpoint, and from a storytelling standpoint, it's really important for the people working behind the scenes to understand the point of view, to understand any messaging, to understand the frame of mind of the artist or what he or she is trying to convey so that they can bring that story forward. I think what we've found out is the deeper a PR team gets involved in the backstory, the better they are at telling a simple story to get more engagement, to get more interest, and to spread the word about an artist, a collection, an exhibit. The other thing that's important also is branded content so that there's consistency. And really, you're in many ways guiding the audience as to what the audience may want to understand about a project or an exhibition. Exactly what Sean said about this new exhibition that he's doing. And what's the narrative behind that? So there's all of that. And then also it helps if you're working with a collector that wants something to be more public or an anonymous collector. How do you tell that story and keep their names out of the media and still bring that story forward? So PR firms play a role and help shape the story, bring energy to the story, decide what visuals will work. We bring an objective point of view, but we also become part of the team in many ways, to decide how and where this story can best serve the public or an audience. So that's been our experience. For example, the MoMA has 200,000 works from around the world. 90,000 are online. So when you open, you know, when you go to the website and the pages come alive, you see that there is that story. So again, messaging, talking points, all of that framed around a certain topic makes it more, I think, engaging, interesting, and hopefully inspiring for the audience.
Right.
Sean, your turn.
You know, I'll be honest here, a moment of levity. I had no idea what public relations individuals did until I met Geeta. And what I really appreciate about your question, Isha, but also what Geeta is talking about is storytelling. And that we are at a moment right now, and maybe we have been for quite some time, where there isn't storytelling much anymore. Stories used to be shared with family members and community members, and it was a way of sharing knowledge and passing knowledge down. And I feel like museums and institutions like ours really have become the spaces in which storytelling now is happening, I think there would be people that, of course, that social media becomes our new form of storytelling, which it does. Mm-hmm. But it's so disconnected from the individual and from the community, and it becomes such a cacophonous set of voices that what PR can do and what a museum can do is distill the most important story or stories that need to be shared. So there is capaciousness in what those stories can be. And also there is a chance then that by kind of working sympathetically with each other, that PR and whomever PR is working with can kind of chart a course for understanding an idea or a question or a product even, or an artist and so forth. So I feel like storytelling, we have to keep telling stories, and we have to be innovative in how we share those stories.
And I think that also helps in getting the architecture and art, sort of bringing them together, because Geeta, that's what you do, is you create that story between the two, the bridge the gap between them, I guess, in a certain sense. And
I think so. And then if you look at it, I mean, sort of talk, you know, to both of your points about art and architecture, and an architect even maybe as an artist, and how they're trying to create something as part of a city, as part of a landscape, as part of an urban development. How do you tell that story? What is the point of view? Aside from the tall bank accounts, what else is the story behind it? What are they trying to accomplish? The relationship to the audience, the relationship to the people that will be in the building, to the community, to even the streetscape. You know, how is all that going to happen? So there's all of that with urban development, placemaking. And then you have, of course, we had that whole idea of the starchitect in terms of PR. Let's hire this amazing architect and we'll get the best PR. But then we also have the idea of really intelligent and thoughtful design. What's going to happen after? You're talking about Corbu and what happened, that whole scheme and generation. So for us as a PR team, we're always trying to tell the story and the authentic story. And we really love to be involved in projects that are more authentic, that are true, that in many ways have positive contributions. I'm not trying to be idealistic, but also we like to work for people we like. And most of the time, people that we like have some kind of positive, good energy that they'd like to bring to a space or a city. So that's kind of our mandate.
And don't you think now there's so many ways, and I think Sean will also agree, of telling a story. So it could be through a podcast, it could be through a video, it could be through a live conversation, digital walkthroughs. I think, Sean, you're exploring every aspect possible now.
Absolutely.
Everything that's digital, everything, even broadcast media, you know, podcasts, webinars, all of that. The idea of preview events or podcasts that are preview and exhibition, all talking to the artist, bringing the artist for a little road trip around the country, around the world. You see that all over. And you see that happening even at Salone del Mobile, right? It's sort of a culmination of all these different media happening at the same time. So I think in many ways it's about the experience, it's about the story, it's about the visuals, and it's about the text and the content and the concept behind what they're trying to do. And then it's also lovely when you're working with an amazing architect who is articulate and can tell the story and can inspire and sort of create some excitement around a building or a space. So
on that note, I'm going to ask you my last question, which is, in contemporary artists or architects that you have your eye on at the moment, it could be an Indian or an international artist architect.
Oh, Isha, that's... Well, I'm going to kind of go against what I was talking about earlier and talk about both architects and then artists. Just because I miss desperately going to galleries in Delhi and in Bombay, and going to the India Art Fair, and going to the Dhaka Art Summit. And, you know, when I'm in India and in Sri Lanka, I go to galleries because there's so much happening and continues to happen, which is great. In terms of architecture, a lot of these individuals are my friends, and I've learned a great deal from them. And so there is a generation now of emerging or you know, emerged architects working on the subcontinent whose work is quite exceptional. And so, you know, in speaking to art in particular, I've also had the great opportunity to meet the greats, the Dianita Singhs, the Nalima Sheikh, the Gul Muhammad Sheikhs, and Monica Correa. You know, these are extraordinary people whose work still tells the story of an emergent South Asia, of an emergent post-independent India. But when we think of the contemporary, I can't help but acknowledge someone like Seher Shah, whose work, just every time she produces a drawing or collaborates with her husband Randhir Singh, who's an accomplished photographer, I can't help but think of what we've been talking about today, about the overlaps between architecture and art and what they tell us about the world. But then someone like Tanya Goel, a painter in Delhi, whose work is just exceptionally beautiful and very disciplined and precise. My first exhibition at MoMA included an exceptional installation by Rina Kalat called Woven Chronicle that has now been seen in multiple venues, that particular work. And then I had the great fortune of working on a show within the Dhaka Art Summit last year. It was the last place I went to before a lockdown in the U.S. I was in Dhaka with Shehzad Dawood and Rana Begum, who did work.
Beautiful.
Our project for Dhaka was to ask artists to respond to the work of an architect, Masrul Islam. And what you realize is that dialogue started to set up whole new ways in which we, or they, can understand the built environment, but also representation more broadly. So that's my art world, and I have to apologize to anyone that I have forgotten in that realm. But then in terms of architecture, just thinking about the region a bit more broadly, I had one of the most extraordinary experiences in the Beitar Roof Mosque by Marina Tabassum, a Bangladeshi architect, whose work just transformed the power of what a space can do. But likewise, I brought the first South Asian architect into the MoMA collection too, Anupama Kandu in Pondicherry, and of course, Rajaraval, the great Rajaraval. But younger architects, Samit Padora in Bombay, SPA, Shimal Kadri, Madhav Raman, an Anagram architect, Anthill Architects. I could list all of them.
Yeah, see, he knows everybody, Isha, and they know him. That's even the better part.
Yeah, I was expecting some international names, and he's like rattled off all the Indian, like all my favorites. So I was like, wow, this is perfect. But that's worked out well. No, I think you've given us enough names, and this conversation has been absolutely insightful. So thank you so much, Sean and Geeta, for being with us today.
Thank you.
I feel like we found some light in our conversation today in some direction. So thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in. This brings us to the end of another episode of the Design Pataki podcast. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation. We'll see you in our next episode. Until then, head over to www.designpataki.com for stories on Indian and international design, art and architecture. Take care and see you soon.